National Bank of Pakistan cyber attack. I realized when I saw the headlines for this that actually we seldom cover attacks on financial institutions. Then when I saw the name of the bank also, my heart sank a little because it's the central bank of, I thought it was the central bank of Pakistan. In Malaysia, our country's central bank also regulates the industry and makes fiscal policies to ensure the health of the country's financial system. So fortunately or not, the National Bank of Pakistan is not the country's central bank. But the attack is reported to have impacted the bank's over 1,000 ATM machines, internal networks, and mobile apps. This happened like at time of recording today. It happened about 7 days ago. But everything quickly came back online, right? What have you guys heard about this?
Welcome to the Security Lab Podcast.
Yeah, apparently they were down for around 2 days. The attack happened on a Friday and the bank network was down over the weekend and they were back up on Monday. So I think they were down for 2 days.
So let me chip in on the whole incident. This happened during Friday and Saturday. And the only way that this incident could have happened is that the attack had directly impacted the backend systems. Because traditionally, if you look at how banks are structured, the backend system is where all the critical operations happen. So from making sure who has how much money, what transactions were done, were all stored in the backend. The front-end systems are things like, for example, your ATM network, your mobile app, your internet-facing systems. So these are the front-end or the northern part of the system, whereas the core system is the back-end part of the system.
So everything quickly came back online, as in like the customers were able to withdraw money from ATMs and use mobile apps, I'm presuming, right? But do you foresee there could be other repercussions that the customers will face later on? Or they are facing it right now, but they just don't realize it?
Based on the report that was provided by the Record Media, it seems that there were no fronts lost. So the question was, was it an attack that was just meant to disrupt the bank's operation? Because usually, I mean, if I'm an attacker and I have access to a bank, now, why would I want to just do a denial of service and bring down the system? Now, I'll be willy-nilly doing transfers, money laundering. I mean, the possibility is limitless. I can do a whole load of stuff. So it's, for me, it's rather odd that the attackers decide to disrupt the bank rather than, you know, actually making use of their access. And I mean, you have access to the core and, you know, there's a lot of things you could do. You could transfer money around. I mean, there's just a lot of things that you could really do with that kind of access. So I don't know. This is, to me, this whole news article just doesn't add up.
Your experience in financial institutions, what's the likelihood of something like that happening? You know, you have been breached, you have been attacked, but there is no loss reported. It leaves us to wonder, why would you ever do that, isn't it?
Well, if you look at how banks are structured, I mean, any bank in the world, for that matter of fact, the front end of the system or the northern part of the system where it's either facing the customers or, you know, the staffs working in the environment is usually your run-of-the-mill kind of system. And what I mean by run-of-the-mill would be like Windows or Linux systems. Either you'd be using Red Hat or Windows 11, Windows 10, whichever version that the bank or the financial sector decides to use. these systems are the one that is more likely to be affected than anything else. Say, for example, if you have a ransomware, then that ransomware is going to affect your, what I call this front end or the northern part of the system more than the back end, because traditionally banks used to use large mainframes, you're talking about AS400s and very proprietary systems in order for them to run banking softwares. I mean, there are some banks that have moved everything into the x86, x64 type of systems, but we still see a lot of banks, especially the traditional banks, running in these very obscure systems. So if you want a very successful cyber attack against the bank, it's not about targeting Windows or Linux. It's about targeting this obscure backend system that you have access to all the data and all the transactions. So in this particular attack for National Bank of Pakistan, they hit the jackpot. But I guess maybe something went south and, you know, they kind of messed up and maybe they rebooted the whole mainframe system. So I still remember the days when we had exploits on buffer overflows. And those days, the exploit weren't refined yet. So in some systems, the whole system will reboot. So if there's no persistence mechanism in that particular server that's targeted, you essentially lose access. And that's what the hackers use to have this conundrum of, you know, would I trigger a lot of red flags if the system gets rebooted? So in this case, the system went down for 2 days and they managed to come back up. So in that sense, I guess they managed to recover it.
Could this be a case of like the Indonesian maneuver? Remember the Indonesian intelligence agency where there were credible sources that said there were some people looking around in their networks, but the intelligence agency said, no, it's not happening. Could this be what's happening here as well? You know, like, Doc, what are your sources at Recorded Future saying? Maybe just the news article is not enough.
Well, they are claiming that two sources told them it's a cyber attack. There's a whole lot of possibilities. It can be a cyber attack, or it can be a system failure, or if they're using an antiquated or an old system, then you have all these connectors that allows more newer systems to talk to the older systems. Sometimes these connectors or adapters can go down for whatever reason it may be. Maybe it encountered a data packet that didn't meet a certain requirement, hence the system didn't know what to do and it died a horrible death. Right? I've seen this happen, you know, because, for example, each system is designed based on that country's requirement. So sometimes you may have a foreigner coming, say, from a certain country that may have an apostrophe in their name or some weird characters in their name, and the system just isn't built or designed to handle those kind of exceptions, hence dies. I mean, let's not go so far. If you look at Malaysian name, my old name had A/L. And as a result, I had a lot of issues when I was in the US. So much so that they changed it to, and everyone started calling me L because it was part of my surname. So you have these kind of issues where systems are just not designed for that plurality of situations. It's just designed for that particular situation. So as a result, I mean, in this case, I'm just taking the Record Media or Recorded Future's word for it to say that there may be a cyber attack. But again, the modus operandi and the outcome is something that, you know, it's rather curious to note, because you got access to a bank. Well, you didn't transfer millions. Okay. Yeah. Why not? You know, I mean, that's any bad guy worth his or her or their salt would be doing, right? It's like, hey, I got access to this nice little piggy bank. Let me do something about it. Yeah. Let me not reboot the mainframe so that everyone, the whole bank, knows something went wrong. Because even in disaster recovery in a financial sector, we actually have a very lengthy playbook for us to follow. Because when we bring down systems, because we do these simulation exercises where we bring down a primary site, we bring up our backup site, and we let it run for a certain amount of time. This is to make sure that if for whatever reason your primary site goes down, your backup site can come up and still serve all the customers with all the load it needs to serve, so that you have that assurance that, you know, your backup system is good. And even for those exercises, I've seen it done overnight. And some of this takes 6 hours, 8 hours, 12 hours, because of the number of sequence of activities that had to be carried out one after another with pinpoint precision in order for the systems to come up and function properly. So it's not like, okay, let me just press the power button and it's up. It doesn't work that way. Because you have so many interdependencies, interconnected systems, everything has to be done in a certain sequence in order to come up.
Enjoying the show so far? Subscribe now so that you don't miss out on the latest episode. We are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many other platforms. Visit podcast.securitylaw.asia to get the links to subscribe.
So if we look at a possible attacker messing up the, I mean, here I'm just assuming mainframe. It may not be mainframe at all, it may be something else. So let's assume the scenario that the attackers did access this system that we call mainframe and accidentally rebooted it. Then, yeah. But then again, usually for DR and recovery activities, they give a maximum time about, I don't know, in Asia, it's about 4 hours to bring it up. 2 days is a bit of a stretch, so which means that there may be other things that may not be working or may have corruption issues. Maybe they might say that, okay, we don't know what's the state of the system before it went down. We have to do a full recovery, so they have to bring the tape back from the disaster recovery site or the off-site, you know, run a tape dump, and then look at the latest online transactions and merge that. That takes time. So in that instance, maybe 2 days is reasonable, because you might take 1 day to bring your interconnectivity from your other systems and 1 day just to, you know, restore all your systems from a known good backup. So yeah, it makes sense. 2 days makes sense. But again, until and unless you hear something official and candid from them, at this point, we are theorizing as to how the attack is. But for a bank to get hit at its core system, it's really huge, which means they would have, again, I'm assuming it's not the Bangladesh hack attack. This is National Bank of Pakistan, so I would assume they have slightly better levels of security. In order for anyone to even breach a bank, you will have multiple levels of security, multiple levels of firewall, security infrastructure, access control in place before anyone could even dream about seeing the IP address of your backend system. But then again, I'm theorizing. So without actually knowing how good or ungood their security posture is, we're just postulating on the matter.
It was almost like a non-event to the point that fake news regarding this event was blown out of proportion with some news, some fake news circulating that 9 banks went down and some money was stolen. But of course, somebody said that it's not true.
Well, the interconnectivity would have been an issue because, for example, I mean, if you go to any countries, usually the ATMs are connected. So if you're a customer of Bank A, you should be able to go to Bank B's ATM and take out money. So the assumption would always be that, say, if I'm using Bank A and I go to Bank C's ATM and I try to put my card in and it says, sorry, I can't show you a balance or you can't take out money. My assumption is, this bank is lousy. Something's going to happen, right? And I go back to my home bank and I put in my card and say, sorry, your account is not accessible. Then you're going to be like, hey, what's happening? What's going on? And unfortunately, with financial systems, panic sets in very fast. Like, for example, what happened recently, not too long ago in Afghanistan, where once the Taliban took over the country, or as they are taking over countries, the banks started freezing withdrawals. And, you know, naturally, people get very worried about the safety of their assets, which is in the bank. Rightfully so, because, I mean, today, almost every day, we hear something bad happening, you know, either fraud and all that. So there's always this fear in people's mind. Yeah, you know, the bank is secure. In some countries, your deposits are guaranteed. So if you lose a certain amount, the bank will replenish it back. So there's a general consensus that the banking sector is fairly secure compared to the rest. But, you know, because of all these happenings, there's still going to be a nagging thought on everybody's head and say, hey, can I sleep peacefully if tomorrow the ATM, doesn't work?
I think from what you have shared, we don't really know a lot about this incident. Okay? But is it possible that, or can we just say it is a lack of development? Like you say, a lot of people have the impression that banking systems are very secure, but we do know that there are also a lot of legacy systems in banks. So in this case, probably it's a lack of development, because then it results in vulnerability due to and causes a lack of resilience.
You're absolutely right. It's really difficult to say until and unless the people who are affected actually come up and say, this is what happened. And most likely, you're not going to hear the real full story. Unless if you're, say, operating, say, from a country like Singapore. I don't know. And this is my favorite go-to phrase. You know, I feel that it's kind of a culture in Asia where saving grace or saving face comes primarily before anything else. And that's a huge hindrance for cybersecurity, because if you don't share that information and we don't share what happened, you can't learn. And if you can't learn, you're doomed to make a mistake.
I was just reading the same article that you mentioned on Record, right? And there is an interesting tweet by someone. I think he's a security researcher. And he says that there was a malware that was pushed by a privileged account via Active Directory, which corrupted the boot sequence of these computers and hence prevented them from booting. Now, if we take this as, you know, the fact, or even if you consider this scenario, there could be a lot of other possibilities, right? What if someone's machine was compromised? It could be an admin, or it could be someone, maybe an end user who had an administrator's account that was logged in. You know, maybe his admin credentials were cached using past the hash and other attacks. You can actually pull out those credentials, right? Or maybe it was just malware that compromised this particular account. What if, again, now from this compromise, someone managed to get into the Active Directory and from their push PowerShell via GPU or something of that sort? You know, you're trying to target 1,000 ATMs at a time. I mean this is just a possibility, right? So just thinking about it, it could be something that could trigger an attack like this.
You're absolutely right. So for example, Microsoft had a vulnerability called Zero Logon, which affects the domain controller, I think below 2016 and below, sorry, 2018 and 2020 below, which affects domain credentials. So you need an unprivileged client that gives you access into a privileged account. And from there, you can actually set a GPO. The GPO pulls down the malware to all the machines. And yeah, you're absolutely right. That's like a Active Directory doomsday scenario, where, you know, you actually use Active Directory to effectively propagate your malware. You're absolutely right. But, I mean, I'm curious to note if, you know, National Bank of Pakistan is actually running their core backend system on Windows now. That's scary.
Even if their core banking system is running on non-Windows machine, right? It's running on mainframe. The ATMs could be running on Windows, right? And even with this GPU attack or this Active Directory attack, you can still take down the ATMs. So maybe the core banking system has not gone down, but it's only the ATMs. And in this case, it is true, right? It's the ATMs and I think mobile applications that were affected.
Yeah, the common system here would be the core, because end of the day, the protocols which how the ATM operates and how the mobile banking works are completely different. So based on my experience, I would say that it's most likely core banking system that went down. That's why you can't do any transaction. So it's most likely core banking. Because if you look at the way the protocol that ATM works and how your mobile banking is going to call and get the data back from your core system is going to be completely different. So these are two disparate systems that won't be interconnected with each other. So yeah, so this is an interesting story. I hope that we could actually learn more from this. And I hope that at some point of time, we get more clarity as to what actually happened. And it'd be good to know who the attackers are, whether it's just another underground group or maybe even a nation state player. So I guess the story is going to continue to develop. We'll keep in touch on this. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us this week on Security Lab. Make sure to visit our website at securitylab.asia, where you can subscribe to the show in iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS so you'll never miss a show.